It's also shocking because it makes me now, I can understand now why they would want us to be financially illiterate, why they wouldn't want us to understand truly and really understand the roots of spirituality and all of these other things, why materialism and you know, just naked atheism and all these other things, and having no belief whatsoever in a higher power, why all of these things fell into place. It was for a time like this. So when these things would start falling, a lot of people wouldn't even understand that they're actually happening.
Hey everybody, it's your boy Isaac, host of Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture, with an emergency broadcast. It's an emergency because it's important. It's important because you know I love you, right? Well, I got the man on here. I got a guest. This is the fourth time the champ has been on SMQ. And you'll hear all the little preamble. I won't double up on you on that. But today we're going to talk about a little bit on alien disclosure, just to sort of lighten the mood a little bit. Then we're going to talk a little bit on this idea of the cyclical nature of time and how, you know, there's this sort of underlying current behind the revolution. And then we're going to get into it, man. We're going to get into this whole idea on what is happening with the Wall Street bets. And if you don't know anything about this, you got to understand it. You've got to get your head wrapped around it real quick, like I did. I don't understand the stock market. I don't understand what's going on with it. But good news, we got the man, the expert, right? SMQ. Because he's worked in the financial industries for a period of time. He knows what's going on. He was the guy who used to give data over to the brokers, as he reveals, as he discusses with us. I didn't even know that when I got a hold of him. I know he's plugged into some of these groups sometimes, and I thought, well, he seems like he knows what he's talking about, and I need to catch up with him on aliens and all this stuff anyway. But there's some concerns going on globally, and we need to wrap our heads around what's happening. This is very important. That's why this is an emergency broadcast. And I've got some thoughts I'm going to hit you with on the other side. We ran out of time, so I'm going to hit you with on the outro with some more thoughts of how this ties into the occult concepts and the Armageddon. GameStop turns into Armageddon. It's like that meme with the dominoes, you know? A gorilla gets killed in the zoo and the big domino falls over. It's the Armageddon. So yeah, take a listen to the show. I'm telling you, this is very important. I'll hit you on the other side. SMQ, glad to have you back on the show. You're my reigning champ. I believe this is our fourth show, and I believe that's the most for any guest. So, you know, kudos for that. And the last time that we talked was July 2019, Remnants of a Different World. We talked UFOs and ritual magic. So let's catch up, man. What have you been up to since then? There's a lot that's happened, obviously.
Yeah, there's a lot that happened since July 2019. Obviously, we had COVID, we had the lockdowns, and besides that, though, we had at that time, I believe, if memory serves me correctly, the UFO thing was kind of ramping up around that time period, and there were more and more articles from very mainstream sources, such as, you know, The Post, the New York Times, The Washington Post, The New York Times, The New York Post, and on and on and on. And it had a real feel that this thing was really moving forward, and I thought that there would be some kind of disclosure or, you know, the proverbial UFO landing on the White House lawn. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, it just kind of just petered off and stopped. And, you know, people are still talking about it now, but the intensity, particularly in terms of the mainstream press, it being almost, you know, part of the weekly cycle, if not the 24-hour cycle, kind of has petered off since then. And it wasn't until I had a recent guest on, like last month, that, you know, they mentioned that their sources, and he was into the UFO UAP thing as well, and his sources were telling him that what had happened was at the last minute, you know, quote unquote, whatever, the aliens had pulled out of, you know, the big reveal at the very end. So I don't, you know, this is sort of a, I'm sorry about that. This is a, I'm trying to pull up, find the video here. Yeah, it was Andrew Radowitz. And that was from last month. And he has his own sources and everything with the Monroe Institute and also with Dr. Stephen Greer. And apparently there was going to be some kind of big reveal, and that was scrubbed at the last minute. And then, you know, we find out like a month or two ago, they start leaking out in various articles, according to an Israeli intelligence source, that, you know, there was going to be this unveiling of you know, aliens to humans. And I, you know, you can take that for what it's worth. Until I'm at the point where if I don't actually see it, or I don't actually see a documentation, a white paper, a firsthand source that I know is credible, I don't put a lot of stock into those kind of things. But when something like this filters out to more mainstream papers, and even if it's sort of a rumor thing, you know that it was some kind of push, whether it was genuine or not. It was something that they wanted to move the needle on, and people, it was long enough where people feel safe to talk about it. So, at the time, I was really confused. You know, I had a source, we were talking a lot about it, and then it just kind of went away. And then I find out, you know, a month ago or so, it's, you know, what, 12 months on, 12 plus months on, almost 18 months, that, you know, that's sort of the rumor that was going around about why it went away. So you can take that for what it's worth.
Makes me wonder if there's not, because when we get into our Wall Street discussion later, I've got sort of my viewpoint on a possible theory of what's happening. And it makes me wonder if they wanted to do this mass disclosure and then they sort of punted a little bit because they were like, well, wait a minute, we've got a couple moves we can make before then to sort of better position ourselves or whatever. Because my perspective, I feel like this could go one of many ways. But the power structures that be want the alien movement to be a threat and also a way of consolidating us into the global government or whatever. So, you're right, man. Things were heating up. Like I said, we were talking about this in July 2019. And I was starting my research for my alien book around that time. And then things really heated up in 2020, and I really got deep into the research, and that's kind of the perspective I wanted to share with the book. Was I think you and I come at this from the same, I don't know, same perspective about the aliens and the UFOs, and like really there's a real scientific mental component to this thing, and it's way more complicated than the masses could understand. So I think that's why they've been so hesitant to do mass disclosure, because I think the public just simply can't understand what it is. And I'm not saying I've got this enlightenment that I fully get it, but I think it's way more complicated than the masses would understand. And I'm concerned they think it would cause some kind of mass hysteria and people couldn't handle the real truth about disclosure. So I think you're on to something as well. I don't know. We'll see what happens over time. So are you still doing Lost and Found Bin, or what shows are you working on right now?
Yeah, I moved. I kind of backed off a little bit from the channel. If something comes up really well, that's kind of just falls in my lap, and it's something I just can't resist. Like Andrew, about a month ago. And someone is really credible. They're very interesting. They know people I may know, or they know people I may know of. Certainly, that is something that's an option. But in terms of the weekly grind of the Lost and Found Bin, you know, I only backed off on it because I thought, in terms of the hard research that we had, because I tried after the 2012 series, I tried with Buster and Chick, I tried to get more into less speculation and more hard research and things that we could look at and things that we could hold in our hands and show people and point them to links and say, this is what we're talking about. This isn't speculation in terms of us. If it's speculation, it may be on the part of these authors. And then when we were talking about a particular white paper, an R&D paper, an article, we always tried to make sure that it was from either a major corporation or it was from a department of the government like the DOD or the CIA, or we were trying to point to something like phys.org or NASA.org. We were always trying to point to something that was mainstream, that if you wanted to dispute it, you can dispute it with, you know, the source. You would have to go to the source and not really us, because I would always try to partition off the part from what it was saying versus what we would speculate on. And I wanted to make it a more hard, you know, a more hard reporting kind of thing. And because we were at the end sort of kind of like the gateway process, psychotronics, everything to do with the mental universe and all of those things, you know, we would have to, you know, dive in deeper and dig much harder and much deeper into the material, find new material, and talk to new sources. You know, and this was all coming together at the same time when things were heating up for me. I felt as if things were just over the horizon that were a bit more hostile. I thought that, you know, my six was kind of left uncovered, and I felt really vulnerable. I was dealing with really big things that I don't think I really understood the implications of. I felt like, you know, also the other two folks, Buster and Chick, you know, I didn't want to inadvertently get myself in trouble and get them in trouble. So there's a lot of things to this. I think a lot of people think with the more speculative side, that's more fantastic and more poppy and this kind of stuff, they think it's just a bunch of kook and ridiculous, you know, kooks and ridiculous people. But if you brush all that away and you really start getting into the research and you really start getting into the hard papers and you really read it, the popular idea of UFOs, the popular idea of the occult, the popular idea of all of these kinds of things that are kind of X-Files or fringy, anything, the way I would put it is anything that would get the X-File theme on your nightly news, anything like that is far and removed from the actual papers, the actual the scientists that write papers for, you know, the DOD, for the DIA, for the CIA. It's way deeper than what the popular, you know, the popular ideas, the popular understanding is. So, you know, and because of that, and because we were approaching it from that, I felt as if I felt more vulnerable. It was a more instinctual thing because no one actually came to me and made me feel threatened or anything like that. I had just heard enough stories and I had just, you know, I think you get it. It's just one of those things where every now and then you'll wake up at 2 a.m. and you'll be nervous for no reason. And ever since we backed off from and not to mention the YouTube crackdown. So there wasn't as if there was any kind of exposure or any kind of monetary, and I don't care if I sound shallow for that, if there was any kind of monetary compensation, because also another very real thing is if you hit the wrong nerve or the right nerve, depending how you look at it, they also will come at you financially, they'll come at you legally, and there's a lot of things that could happen to you. And if you don't have any kind of those resources, particularly financial resources that you could get from the channel or that you could derive from social media, then you truly are vulnerable and out there. And you hear of people who went really deep, like a Tracy Twyman. You hear people who go ultra deep and things happen to them. So, you know, those are cautionary tales. And, you know, I'll admit it. I was scared. I was afraid. And, you know, I think you get it.
Totally. I'm with you, man. Sometimes, and you're right. It's a feeling more than anything. And I don't know how to describe it, you know, because I've been doing this kind of research for, like, actual researching for coming up on about 10 years. And it's, you know, I'll research these dark, seedy things, and some days it totally doesn't bother me. And then other days I something will happen and it'll trigger an idea in my head. And I'll be like, oh my God, like, maybe I am putting myself at risk here. This is kind of crazy. And I don't know. I get what you're saying, man. Sometimes there's certain subjects and certain things that I've come close to and sort of got scared off the track but then later sort of came back and revisited, you know, because you're right, man, like, you know, Tracy Twyman died, and, you know, Max Spears died, and people that were researching some of these realms. And, you know, I don't know if it was a massive conspiracy that they died, but it sure is sketchy, and, you know, it can get dark quick. So I try to, sometimes when I get real deep like that, I sort of try to back it back out and keep it light and poppy, you know.
And for me at the time there, I couldn't see any more upside. There was just no upside to it. I was plateaued off at YouTube. You know, and I had already known that there were, you know, hostile forces, let's say. So it was just like, you know, if they win, I did the best I could. I'm just going to throttle off. And also too, I wanted to get more into the spiritual side of things. I wanted to explore the occult, and you really can't do that, not really in public, if you want to do it properly. And this is something I always wanted to get into, because it was a natural progression for me to go in from deep meditation and the gateway process to a more organized understanding of how to work with these energies. And I thought, well, the last thing I want to do is follow models that other people have followed and do this in public, because it always seems to go wrong. So that's also why I backed off the channel, and I only make appearances like this every now and then, because I'm out. The whole purpose of why I did all of this, and why I mentioned it on the channel, why I backed off the channel, was it wasn't for attention or anything like this, was because we had things that were interesting to talk about, because we had things that were, I thought, advancing sort of our understanding for those who wanted to understand, and those who wanted to explore, and those who wanted to really sit down and read the DIA or DOD documents and try to make an understanding of what consciousness is, what reality is, and all of those other things in a real and meaningful way, and not just say something and not have anything to back it up with. Right. And when you start getting into sort of the occult sciences and all these other things, it's more an internal journey. So unless you're out teaching it, or you've mastered something about energy work, or you've mastered something else, there really isn't anything for me to talk about. And in fact, you know, until you move from, like, you know, a more neophyte into more of, you know, a more master role, there's real dangers in that. So I didn't, you know, I've moved away from the whole, you know, just full throttle. I'm on every week, and I'm just going. And, you know, until this GameStop thing happened, I hadn't been on even Twitter very regularly for, you know, a really long time. Right, I would post, yeah, I'd post maybe once a week or something like that. And there'd be days and days and days that I wouldn't even look at social media at all, because I was busy reading books and I was trying to understand this kind of material and where it goes. Because if you follow the arc of the channel, you can see where it leads to, and where all of this leads to. And it leads to, you know, the supernatural, or it leads to the occult. It leads to, you know, all of these kinds of things. And for me, that isn't a negative thing. That's, you know, I know a lot of people have a bitter taste in their mouth when you say those kinds of things, but it just means hidden. You know, it's hidden knowledge, and it was hidden knowledge on purpose. And I can see why it's hidden knowledge now, because it's potent and it's powerful. And it's just something I just, you know, because I don't have the history or the background that a lot of people do, I'm more open to these kinds of things. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, I get you. And I, on my show, I come off very critical of the occult movement, and I try to always sort of pull it back in and rein it back in and tell people, like, look, I'm not condemning or judging this thing. I think it's fascinating. I really do. And I don't know what the right path is. Like, maybe these occultists are right. And this is a good time that we can segue over to a quick rehash of the show we did back. I think we recorded it in 2017. But we were talking about your series of We Died in 2012, which was an interesting idea. And to give a very brief summation of it, I'm going to give a very brief summation of it, and then I'm going to add a little occult flair that I had found in my research, and then you can tell me know, what other thoughts you've got on this. But the idea, that the one that's relevant to today's show, when we talk about the Wall Street stuff, there, you were talking about this new system coming into play, and it was this blend of, you know, time sacrifice into the money structure. The quote I pulled out here from our show, you said, "Time is a construct for the monetary system. Identities are tied to what we can donate to this structure." And basically, you know, my understanding of that is kind of, and I'll let you explain it, but my understanding of that is kind of like, you know, you go to work 40 hours a week and you're donating your time, you're sacrificing your life quite literally to the structure set up, the economic system, the capitalist structure. And that's the way it's been. And people have always assumed that's how we should be living. And lately, with this new age upon us, there seems to be a real pushback against this. And you even mentioned on the show, because I started kind of listening to it again, you even mentioned the Occupy Wall Street movement, which I totally forgot about.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I thought, man, SMQ was on the money with this. You know, 4 years ago, we were talking about this. Tell me what new insights you've got on this kind of idea.
Well, I was thinking back then, you know, I knew this was sort of where we're at. I didn't know how it would play out specifically, but I knew that we were kind of heading to these kinds of troubled, what we would perceive as troubled waters right now, because I knew that, you know, the whole thrust of the We Died in 2012 was kind of I was just inspired and I just started to talk about it. And I knew that I just had this insight that things were going to start breaking down really soon. And things just started to come to me. And that was also part of the thrust, the later thrust of the show, was I would wake up and I would have all these insights and I would write down from the evening before, or sometimes I would take a nap and I would wake up and start writing down exact. And I didn't know where it came from. And I was like, what are the source of ideas? What is the nature of an idea? How do we come up with these ideas, and what does it all mean? And I knew with enough conviction to talk about it that, you know, there was going to be what we're in now. I didn't know exactly how it would manifest. I just knew that it was going to manifest. And, you know, I just knew that we were on this linear scale and we're moving into a more cyclical scale. And there's going to be a period of disruption for that. And, you know, the idea of the Western philosophy, Western tradition, Western religions is linear. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, for example, Christian culture has a beginning, you know, which we all know what it is, particularly if you're culturally a Christian, you know what it is, and you have a middle, and then you sort of had this end game, which is kind of, you know, what would be more or less known in popular culture as the Armageddon, which would be, you know, technically the unveiling. And that's kind of, in a way, what we're kind of going into now, but there's really not anything for after that. Now, in the popular American Christian understanding of that is that's just it. It's over with, and there's, you know, we go on to, you know, eternity, and if there's not that, then what happens? Or you can presuppose if it's already happened and we have the inability to cope with what had happened, you know, eventually the unveiling will happen in a series and sets of processes. And that's sort of what had come to me. So I just wrote it down and started to talk about it. And I would just kind of start riffing as I went, and it would just flow right out of me. And it was kind of a feeling I always had. You know, I just knew that this was going to, you know, the unveiling of the mechanisms. Even now, I'm shocked at what we're learning here, how the system is actually rigged, and how it's just laying, you know, bare before everyone is still shocking to me. And it's also shocking because it makes me now, I can understand now why they would want us to be financially illiterate, why they wouldn't want us to understand truly and really understand the roots of spirituality and all of these other things, why materialism and you know, just naked atheism and all these other things, and having no belief whatsoever in a higher power, why all of these things fell into place, it was for a time like this. So when these things would start falling, a lot of people wouldn't even understand that they're actually happening. But for the rest of us, who by whatever reasons, for happenstance, we understand what's happening, it's truly astonishing times. And I personally, I guess my period of revelation is probably over with, because I really don't know where we go from here, and I don't really have any insights to what's next. So that in itself may be an indicator. I'm not entirely sure. But then again, I have my mind preoccupied with the work that I do every day now, the spiritual work I do every day now. So it could be a little bit of both. So, so that's well, pretty much.
And during our show, to sort of hit on this idea of switching from linear to cyclical, I'm alarmed by everything going on. Okay. And the show we did on We Died in 2012, we talked about CERN and how they were doing this sort of death dance, and how they had the statue of Kali out front. And, you know, we were talking about, like, well, that's a little bit alarming. These guys are creating black holes and all this crazy stuff, and they've got this statue devoted to, like, you know, a death goddess out front. And you mentioned a reference to James Bond being on that infamous CERN music video thing that we were talking about. And I thought about that, and I thought, I wonder if that's not, because James Bond, of course, is a reference into the intelligence agencies and John Dee. And, you know, John Dee, of course, channeled the Enochian language from the language of that was given to Adam from God, from the aliens. And I can't help but think all this alien contact stuff is part of this. But the bigger thing, that what I'm really scared about, is that when I was researching Professor Ben Teitelbaum's book about Steve Bannon, and it was revealed that Steve Bannon was a proponent of traditionalism, which is like a sort of occult, I don't know if doctrine or religion is the right term, but anyways, it's this sort of occult idea of cyclical natures of time. And Steve Bannon and the traditionalists apparently want to accelerate the final Kali Yuga, the final cycle, so that they could start the new one, which is the golden age, but that's the golden age for them. And that leads me into a lot of concerns I have over this weird rebellion that's occurring online. And my fear, and I'll come back to this at the end of the show, but my fear is that this is all being coordinated. This takedown of Wall Street, it's all being coordinated to actually bring about the golden age for these folks, which I believe is the same thing as the Great Reset, just by a different name. But those are like some thoughts that I had from our show. And I guess now's as good a time as any. We might as well get into this Wall Street thing, because that's originally why I reached out to you. But I've been thinking about you for months, dude. Because I've been saying, dude, it really does feel like we died. Like, this feels like we're living in a weird dream, or some other dimension slipped in. Things just don't. I mean, this is super turbulent. Something's happening. And I was like, I got to get SMQ's perspective on this, because I know this is what you've been talking about for years. So we could move into the Wall Street bets, or maybe you've got some more thoughts on this cyclical thing. What do you think?
I can give you my opinion on the Wall Street thing. I know, you know, I started getting into Wall Street bets from a tweet I saw. You know, I'm always into financial stuff because I worked for a brokerage house for a couple years in the back.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I worked in the back. I almost got my Series 7, but I was a data guy, so I would feed the data to the brokers, and I was never a broker. I was never on the trading floor or anything like that. But part of my job was to take the feed from Thompson's and feed it to the brokers so they would have meaningful data so they could make trading decisions. So I started to understand how puts, calls, and all those kinds of financial instruments work. So I always had one eye on it. And I, as a retail investor, I was always frustrated because I knew how the system worked. I knew how to work all the different technical indicators. I understood, you know, the different kinds of ways to trade and everything like that. And I just, you know, it always frustrated me because I was a retail trader, and it never seemed to kind of pan out for me. But whenever I was with the brokerage house, it worked pretty well. And it was always a mystery and a puzzle to me until I actually read an article today where they were talking about where Wall Street Bets was actually running up against these bigger hedge funds. And, you know, it actually says here, and I got the quote, Citadel Securities retail business has repeatedly drawn controversy. Like Virtu and other market makers, Citadel Securities pays brokerages for the right to trade against individual investors' orders. Well, that's me. And there would be always times where I would do these small trades in a series of successions, and I would do pretty well at it. And then I would go for the big killer trade, and it would always fall through. And I thought, you know, I'm using the same strategy I always use. And I always thought, and I didn't really voice it because you sound like a crazy person, like there's someone on the other side of the computer watching, or there was an algorithm watching and waiting, and it like knew my pattern and would go against me. And it was like, well, this looks like it's actually possible. And, you know, I thought, well, there's got to be millions and millions and millions of traders out there like me. But, you know, I had to retrain my brain to think it's all machines anyway. It's not people. Once you write the code, particularly machine code and smart code, it readjusts itself to you. You know, there could be an entire subset for each individual retail trader possibly, and it realigns itself and works on you and thinks about you and the, you know, how you trade, and then works against you to make sure to ensure that you lose your money in the big trade. And so that always irked me, and it always.
Are you suggesting that there's like a gatekeeper, maybe like an AI system, an algorithm that is kind of like, okay, the one percenters, they're all investing in these things, so these are the things we'll enable to make sure they work, and everyone else, you know, make sure these don't work. Like, is that kind of in the ballpark of what you're saying or thinking?
Well, I think it is on a grander scale. Well, like, so let's start with what's going on with Wall Street Bets. The long and short of it was, Wall Street Bets is obviously, you know, it's a Reddit forum where investors, they got together, they did it in mass, and they would talk and do trades together. And the story goes that they were nostalgic about a particular stock, you know, GameStop, because they grew up at the store, the brick and mortar store, and they decided to look for the top, you know, shorted stocks that were out there. And when you short a stock, what it happens is individual retail investors will short a stock by putting a put on it, which is you're betting that the stock will go down. Now, institutional investors, they generally are able to borrow on margin, which means that they're able to borrow from the house, not use their own money. They use the house money. Now, that could be, you know, another hedge fund. That could be the platform itself, which is usually backed. Now we're finding out is actually backed up by the hedge funds, which all this is being revealed even to me this week. It's gotten so bad. So, or maybe it was always this bad and we just didn't know it. Again, it's Armageddon. The unveiling is happening. So they would be able to borrow not only money they didn't have, but they were able to bet against the stock more than 100% of what the stock was worth. Meaning, even Elon Musk tweeted out, you can't buy more than 100% of a car. You can't buy more than 100% of a house, but you can buy more than 100% of a stock. How does that happen? And that's one of the puzzling things that's going on right now. So what they were able to do was they were able to talk down a business on a place like CNBC, particularly if you were one of the really, really heavy, you know, short vultures out there. You were able to get on, you know, CNBC or another financial network, maybe Bloomberg or something, talk down a business and say, it's brick and mortar, it's in malls, it's in strip malls, it's dead, it's the end, you know, end of these guys, it's the end of the road. And while you're doing that, legally, apparently, you were allowed to you know, short it, and you would, it's, there's various different instruments outside of puts where you're able to bet against the stock, meaning you're betting that the stock is going to go down. And when you did that, and then you got on, you know, a public forum and you were able to talk people into being afraid and leaving the stock, you know, it would be a self-fulfilling prophecy and the stock would drop. And then whatever your financial instrument was, and let's say, because I'm a retail trader and I'm most comfortable with puts, your put would grow in value, particularly if the stock dropped, because you, it's a contract saying, I bet that this thing is going to drop. And then your put would suddenly grow in value. And then what you would do is you would, you know, cash in your put. Or what you would do if it was artificial, you would buy the stock really cheap, you'd buy the put, you'd sell covered calls or something like that, and then what you do is buy them back before expiration. The stock would go back up because people would realize that, hey, it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with this business, or you were able to take over the business or liquidate it or do whatever it is that these hedge fund people, whatever it is they wanted to do. But all of it was a form of massive market manipulation. Now, what happened here with Wall Street Bets was all of them were, they, the story goes, and I wasn't at the beginning, I was at earlier this week when this thing started to go up from like $95 to $300. And I, this was me just watching and enjoying it just for the sheer pleasure of seeing multi-billionaire hedge fund, you know, raiders lose their shirts, right? It was just pure schadenfreude. They were all buying like 1 and 2 shares. But the problem was there was, you know, 1.5 million, and then there were 2 million, then there were 2.5 million of them. And they were destroying these guys, because the problem is whenever you short something, there's always this thing, theta, it's time, and it works against you. So whenever you short, you can't short forever. You have to short and you write the contract within a period of time. So if you have puts, it'll usually be in month-long increments. And the longer out in time that you go, the more expensive the contract is going to be. So what you want to do is have it crash immediate, have it crash fast, have it crash before your particular contract runs out. And let's say you're 6 weeks out, so you've got 2 contracts to go. You got 2 weeks on one contract for a month, and then you've got 4 weeks on another contract. So you're really fighting, and you're really getting the word in your newsletter and your buddy's newsletter and everybody who's in your circle to say, this business is garbage, and everybody get out of it. Get out of it. It's a nightmare, and we know inside stuff, and we're really smart, and we know math and economics and Harvard, and they throw all this stuff at you and you get really nervous, and then you would run. Well, these guys said, well, we're buying it because we love the store and we don't care about the fundamentals. We don't care about the technicals, and we don't care about your hedge fund. And for the first time, they became the market makers, meaning they were the ones determining the price, and the price they determined was going to go up. And then it went up and up and up. And in the meantime, as this is happening, because apparently this started like late last year, as this thing went up, they knew from literature that was out there that these, you know, like Citadel and other hedge funds were either associated or were directly shorting this, and they were able to put a squeeze on the short, meaning the stock was going up when they bet it was going down, so it puts you in a squeeze, and what you had to do was cover your shorts, which means you now have a virtuous downward spiral of you, the people who shorted the stock, they have to buy it, because as it goes up, they have to cover the losses of the short, of the short contract, because the short contract is unlimited. You can lose more than 100%. It's unlimited what you can lose. But whenever you buy the stock, it's able to offset some of that damage. But part of the problem is because these people were buying in mass, because it was basically a distributed democratic hedge fund of people just swarming together like a beehive and buying into this. They were buying, and then it forced the hedge funds to buy as well. So whether they liked it or not.
Okay, yes. So the hedge funds are also increasing the value of this stock.
And they hate it. And they don't want to do it. But they have to, because they have to cover their shorts. So whenever you hear people saying covering the shorts, that means that they wrote short contracts. They put puts on there in retail speak, which is small guppy like me. You put a put on there. you write the contract that it's going to be really short, but it turns against you. And because your contract is losing value so rapidly, to offset that, you want to make a profit on the stock. So you hope that you come to a net zero. Well, they were so arrogant, they didn't realize that there was so much firepower and so much rage and so much anger out there. And once they realized that, hey, for just at the time, $90, $150, $300, I can buy a share, I can buy 10 shares, I can buy 5 shares, and we can stick it. Just for the pleasure of sticking it to a hedge fund, we're going to buy it and we're going to hold it until their contract runs out. And sure enough, these guys lost some kind, you know, untold billions of dollars, and they had to actually retrench by going back to other hedge funds and get money so they didn't go out. Now, fast forward to this weekend. Midweek, they were already starting up the ramp up the campaign of, oh, you know, this is just like this 4chan and alt-right. And just like you throw out things, yes, like math and economics and Harvard and you know, central bank. And as you throw it out to intimidate people to get away from the stock, you start throwing out all these terms to CNN to make people terrified to go anywhere near this thing, to tweet about it, to talk about it, or anything. And I think it was like 2 articles that got out saying really negative things about Wall Street Bets. And sure enough, out of nowhere comes AOC. Out of nowhere comes Jon Stewart. Out of nowhere comes all these check marks who are mostly known on the left, and they bailed them out. And then suddenly they had cover, and they had cover from the heaviest hitters. Now you have Matt Taibbi saying the only thing dangerous about a gang of Reddit investors blowing up a hedge fund is some of us reading about it might die of laughter. I mean, now it's, you've got total cover, which you never had before. You never had before in any kind of populist uprising before. But the great thing about this populist uprising is it's truly egalitarian in a sense that these are all, well, I assume the bulk of the people are like me. They're anonymous. They don't know anyone else. And they're doing it simply as almost like it's an emotional, of course, but you also understand that the $36 trillion that these hedge funds that they've taken out and they've destroyed all these businesses, there were real human beings with real jobs, and they supported real families. And we all understand 2008, the country never really actually recovered from the collapse of 2008, which, by the way, was also from speculation. And that if this continued this way, surely, eventually, they literally would have all the money and we would have nothing. So this had to do more with survival. And it, just as much as it had to do with anger, or it had to do with some kind of socioeconomic philosophy, and, you know, and it was something exciting that was going on. And for the first time, people were really empowered. Oh, and then Elon Musk jumped in. I'm going down my timeline. So many people jumped in. And I remember a few years back, they tried to short Elon Musk and destroy his business. And why? Probably because his cars are really, they're really good looking. They run really well, and they don't need oil. They don't need the petrodollar. So there's a lot of cross currents going on right now. Elon Omar, Americans are told to invest in the market, but when they start to threaten the profits of billionaires, strange things happen. If anyone on Wall Street with short positions in particular stocks use their power to cut off the public from buying those stocks, send them to prison. So you had, you know, this Tyler Winklevoss, Isaac Saul, it just goes, I mean, the list went on and on and on and on, and it was just really wonderful. And it was truly egalitarian. It was a true meritocracy in terms of economics, and it's a real eye opener for the rest of the world, really. And now we're getting article after article talking about how the inner workings and the sort of relationships, the familial relationships, happen between a platform, between the hedge funds, between the regulators, between the politicians. And, you know, it's really ugly. It's really bad. And, you know, a lot of people were caught flat-footed. A lot of people, it seems, and now it's like, what are you going to do? I mean, they limited, like me, I tried to sell Nokia. After I had made a little bit of profit, I was selling Nokia. I couldn't sell. So there's a lot of, you know, people out there wondering, we're just holding the line because we have to. And now they're saying that you can only buy, I heard a YouTuber earlier today saying, at least for Robinhood, I'm not on that platform, it went from you being able to buy 65 shares of BlackBerry to 25, now it's down to 5 as Monday creeps in. So already exposed, we don't really have a free economy, or we don't really have a free market. You know, free market capitalism was sort of the charge of the right from, you know, Ronald Reagan all the way through till about, you know, George Bush. It was just go, 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 rah, 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 you know, laissez-faire capitalism will save America, it'll save the world. Well, it appears when it goes, you know, four to the floor and you know, the road meets the rubber and everything, that no, we don't actually have any of those things. And whenever these guys are even faced with a tiny loss, and someone put the discomfort that they're feeling and the panic that they're feeling just today is a taste of what all the rest of us feel every single day when we know that we're one or two paychecks away of losing everything. And it's true. And still yet, they probably have untold billions, because we know that they have tens of trillions of dollars amongst them. And there's only a couple dozen of them, maybe 100 of them or so. So, you know, I think Jeff Bezos is worth $186 billion. I mean, at some point, neoliberalism, laissez-faire capitalism, all those things that you know, the right or libertarians relied on, certainly it went longer than communism. Certainly it's a better system than pure socialism. But at some point, you have to say, well, we put curbs on robber barons back in the early 20th century. You know, what is going to give here, you know, for the good of everyone? Because eventually something is going to give. And I think we may be in the beginning innings of that process.
Oh, it's fascinating. I think that the oligarchy behind all this, like, I've always been critical of, like, this oligarchy and how they've really been consolidating the wealth. And, like, that's always been my big concern, is, like, this middle class squeeze. Like, they just want everything. Like, it's like a sickness in their head. And this Wall Street Bets thing, you're right, man. Like, the oligarchy runs the mainstream media, and I'm not saying everything in the mainstream media is a blatant lie, but, like, you do got to question everything. So to hear the explanation, that was really well done. The oligarchy runs the main, I'll re-encapsulate it. If the oligarchy runs the mainstream media, and then they use that mainstream media to manipulate the stock market for them to consolidate wealth and, you know, crush whoever is in the way, they're now fighting back, because on the New York Times, they're comparing this Wall Street Bets thing to the 4chan, where how they got Trump into office. You know, they're saying 4chan had this, they were, you know, and this overlaps into our sort of research, talking about the occult and charging up memetics and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's kind of like, if there were parts of the internet that were a human consciousness, it's now manifesting into our world. And this is something, I read a book Douglas Rushkoff wrote called Media Virus back in the 90s. And that's kind of the idea. It's like these memes eventually become reality, which is what they're arguing happened with Trump. And they're arguing and comparing this latest movement as well. But, and it's almost like the internet is trolling. Like, they trolled politics by wanting Trump in there. Now they're trolling the oligarchy by sort of taking their money and democratizing. And what's curious to me is that in our last show, the We Died in 2012 show we recorded in, I think it was January 2018 that I released it. But anyway, you talked about censorship, because we were both experiencing it at the time. And you made mention that it had to do with this is one of the defensive moves by the power structure, by the oligarchy, to shut this exact thing down. Because the internet is the genie out of the bottle. And this is what they're worried about. This is the exact thing that can happen. And I've got a couple viewpoints on it or whatever, but yeah, that was a good breakdown of what this is. Now I've, because we're running low on time, I got like maybe 12 minutes left here. rapid fired. Can you tell me the vocabulary here? Because I've sort of dug into this, and this is a world I'm unfamiliar with. Like, for instance, why is everyone calling them stonks instead of stocks? Do you know why they're...
Yeah, I think that it goes back to what happens in any kind of environment where people becomes, you know, friends, you know, like diamond hands, stonks, all those things, hold the line. You end up, you know, with your own language, your own handles, you know, just like with, you know, the Mandela effect world, you know, they started to, you start to manifest your own handles, and you start to manifest your own subculture. And that's all that was happening with this group. And by the way, I don't think that there's a lot of crossover with this group, with like the boards, the 4chan boards and all those things. They're clearly there's some, but they're always going to be, particularly with online folks. But you know, the feel that I get from this group, and the language, and the folks that tie to YouTube channels that I've been watching this week, it's, to me, it seems like a completely different element, a completely different beast. It seems like disaffected, you know, economics people or libertarians or a lot of kids from GameStop, and it all just came together like it does in a natural order, perfect storm. At least not, I mean, natural in that, if this was devised in our realm, then it, you know, whoever did this puts Mozart to shame in terms of the number of people that you would have to control to have all this fall together. And the thing about it is, you're really forcing the hand now, because with politics, it's always theory. There's always a way to push this thing down. But now you're talking about money. You're talking about, well, you know, dollars, you know, and you have people like AOC, Matt Taibbi, not exactly friendly folks to what would have been that old movement back in 2016, to the 4chan folks or Q folks or all that other. This is something, it's a completely different beast, and they quickly realized that those tropes were not going to work, because the brand of AOC is power back to the people. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the embodiment of what this was actually doing. So
is she speaking out against it? Is that what you're saying?
No, she's speaking for it. She gave a lot of cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she came in at the right time and gave everybody cover right at the right moment. Her and John Stewart. And
John Stewart's brother, he like owns the freaking New York Stock Exchange, doesn't he? Isn't that odd?
Oh, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, so John Stewart's brother like owns the freaking New York Stock Exchange, I think.
Okay. Well, this is what she said. She goes, here's her tweet. Gotta admit, it's really something to see Wall Streeters with a long history of treating our economy as a casino complain about a message board of posters also treating the market as a casino. And that was it. That was all the cover that people needed. And that was what? On... blah, 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 blah. January 28th. So that was right when those articles started to appear in CNN about, you know, the whole kind of narrative that you roll out that's very effective. And that just quashed all of it. And then you had celebrities come out, and it was just, you realized you were dealing with a completely different kind of beast altogether. You were dealing with a different animal, and you were dealing with a different population of people for the most part. I'm sure there was some crossover, but for the most part, all the memes I see, I don't see, all the memes themselves seem to be entirely the angst is economic. The angst so far, what I've seen is it's almost playful, but yet it's still there. You know, and then you've got these different folks who started like deep effing value. You can beat me out if you want that, but it's deep with, you know, the F word value. He's one of the guys, and if you look, he looks like, you know, a young guy. I mean, and he's there. You know, with, I think they doxed him on the Financial Times or the Wall Street. It's already getting super ugly everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, okay, so I'm running out of time, but I got two more, three more technically.
Sure.
Could you give me rapid fire explanations for, I got four terms here that I mean, I could probably figure them out, but stonks, diamond hands, hold the line, and we like the stock. What does all this mean?
Well, hold the line is don't sell. Meaning, even if they stop us from what they did a dirty trick and said that you can only sell the stock, you can't buy any more stock, that which is just insanity.
Right.
So they said, hold the line. We're not going to let it drop, because everyone knew almost to the person that if we hold it long enough, this short, they're going to call the margin call on this hedge fund, and eventually the short, the contract will run out, and if we hold the line, they're going to lose all their money.
Got it.
So that's hold the line. That's the most important one. Okay. Stonk, I think is just slang that they're using.
Okay.
And what was the other one?
There's Diamond Hands and the phrase, we like the stock.
Yeah, I think the Diamond Hands thing is sort of like, you know, you type it on your keyboard, Diamond Hands, I think. It's sort of like, I don't know. I'm trying to make a comparison to like earlier memes and earlier kind of slang, but that's what I think is like, okay, the Diamond Hands, you know. I keep thinking in my head like Jazz Hands or something. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But fair. I know Hold the Line had a sort of a practical function to it, telling people, encouraging them, almost like you're in combat. Hold the line. Don't get scared. We're looking the enemy in the eye. Don't give up. Don't sell your stock. Don't do it. So that's what that was.
Because of those contracts you were telling us about earlier, they've got a certain date they got to get to.
That's right.
A number of weeks. Okay. Okay. So I've got a couple questions here. The one I'll finish up with, I'll tell you so I can plant the seed in case you can answer it with the next one. But like the last question I have for you is like, how do we get in on this? But the next question I have to ask you is like, you know, what's the next move, or is that a secret? I mean, what stops the hedge fund managers from themselves just going into these forums and seeing what people are doing? Or is that not really the intent of all this? Because like, you know, I read all this stuff and I think like, dude, I love all this. This is great. How do I do this? Do I just log into Wall Street Bets on Reddit, or, you know, how do you get in on this? What's the next move? Can we even know what the next move is?
Well, I mean, what I did earlier in the week, when I got in, I knew immediately what this was. Fortunately, I had a little bit of background. So I immediately bought Nokia. And then I immediately made a profit and I went to sell it. And by then they had shut down Nokia and a bunch of other things. So I'm still holding the line, whether I like it or not. So it's that easy. You just have to find, and they start talking about it. Like right now they're threatening to do silver next week. If they go and they buy silver, the problem with the precious metals, it's sold everywhere. And if everybody decentralizes and disperses, silver is so much more dangerous because it's systemic and it gets to the banks. So what you're able to do is buy silver and just hold it. That means you would be collapsing all of the positions at JP Morgan, Merrill Lynch, Bank of America. So you could theoretically bring the system to a halt within about, well, whenever the next contract expires, within the next 4 weeks, if everybody were to buy, you know, in America or even in the world, two or three shares of whatever version of silver there is, and then just hold it. Stop moving silver, make it illiquid, and suddenly everything dries up.
You're talking about buying like literal silver, like a bar of silver, or like on the stock market?
I think on the stock market, I think it's SLV, and I think there's, so I think that's what they're talking about. I don't know. I'm waiting to see like anyone else with bated breath, because you've got a lot of things going on, right? What are the regulators going to do? What are the platforms going to do? What are the politicians going to do? Are they going to hold the line? Are they going to, you know, regulate hedge funds out of existence? Are you going to be able to hold more than 100% of a stock? What about short traders? Do they serve a purpose when all they do is take businesses into the ground and they destroy jobs? I mean, you know, a lot of these things that have hurt the economy, a lot of people look around and say, why am I so angry? Why is the America in such bad shape? One of the major reasons, it's for many reasons, but one of the big reasons is multifaceted, and it all goes back to these hedge funds. They run businesses into the ground, and with the money that they made by destroying jobs, they actually use that to buy lobbyists to influence the politicians. So it's almost like this cancer that's attacking all the organs of U.S. society. So this is the first time that there's been sort of a chemo treatment, you know, if I can go with this thing, that's really attacking this thing. And you really see it's a paper tiger. These guys have lost their birds over one stock because they understand the genie's out of the bottle now. We have the formula. It's too late. Sort of like when memetics got out. It's too late. The formula's out. You can put up just one really good meme and make someone look like an idiot, or make a movement just look ridiculous. So this is a very big deal. And I don't know where this goes from here.
It makes me wonder, because you were talking about how these hedge fund managers, they say, okay, we're going to short GameStop. We're gonna publicly shame them and make them sound like they're the worst thing ever, so that we can crush the business and we make a lot of money. Well, I remember for years there were memes going around about you know the meme of GameStop where it's like, you know, you go in there with a $50 game and like, I'll give you 25 cents, you know, a play on that sort of idea. It makes me wonder, like, was that planted by these companies? I mean, they're not stupid, and they're clearly able to and capable to flood the internet with memes and jokes and fake accounts. And there's lots of weird stuff. So to sort of revisit those questions just one more time, if everyone buys silver, like, to play devil's advocate here, you're saying it could collapse the banks. Well, like, that sounds scary to me. I think, well, damn, like, I don't like the one percenters either, but like, I don't want to see my local bank collapse. You know what I mean? Like, should I pull all my money out? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. And it was an article that I read about that. And one of the comments in Wall Street Bet said, if a bunch of, and they use the R word, can collapse the stock market in 1 week, then the stock market deserves to be collapsed. And it's true in a lot of ways that we need to rip the Band-Aid off. If we're this rickety, look, America, you know, beats its chest often about its economic prowess. We have the deepest liquid and, you know, we're the most wealthiest country. If this is the case, then there shouldn't be sort of meme stocks and a Reddit board that's able to take down the U.S. economy whenever apparently all of our enemies, including China and Russia, they're not able to. But you're telling me a board on Reddit is able to do that? And if that's the case, then you have to ask, why would they want to do something like that? And the reason why is because they've been disenfranchised for so long. That's my take.
Yeah.
That's someone who you know, is in the economy. That's someone who isn't, you know, isn't wealthy. So I empathize with where they're coming from. I sympathize. I understand. I get it. So I don't know. You know, if, you know, these guys, they drive around in really wealthy looking vehicles that cost more than my house. They have, you know, the other day they were a $1 million listing on Bravo. And I'm thinking, this is really, you're not reading the room, and it's inappropriate because you're making a lot of people who are, they can't make rent. They're terrified. They're losing their job. Their kids can't go to school. You've got COVID. And then you've got this $1 million listing. And it's like, man, you guys need to pull the show because you need to read the room. Yeah. And all you're doing is sowing discontent. And this is what you end up with.
Yeah,
you know, you. Dude,
I'm with you, man. I'm with you 100%. During this whole COVID thing, like, I see countless celebrities and rappers posting pictures. They're at some exotic island, and I'm like, are you mad? How is there not people trying to put your head on a stick right now?
And someone said this is their let them eat cake moment. And they're let them eat. It's like Elizabeth Warren's, you know, almost siding with the hedge fund, saying we need to crack down on these Redditors. Really? And it was like, but yeah, before AOC jumped in, and it was like, you know, I got to say, in the clutch, AOC came through.
Wow.
You know,
Elizabeth Warren really prided herself on being the, you know, consumer finance protection kind of lady, as far as I knew. That's kind of surprising that she took. Yeah.
Look into who pays her speaking fees. But anyway, AOC really came through, and I was excited to see the tweet, you know, and to see that it wasn't taken down. It's still up right now. John Stewart, kudos on him. Omar, good on her. There's a lot of people that you wouldn't expect that just really came through when this thing needed it the most. I don't have as much as a lot of these people have, and I'm a Johnny Come Lately. I came on this week whenever I started hearing about it earlier in the week, Ilhan Omar. But the guys that have been in, guys and gals that have been in this since, you know, late last year, you know, good on them. They created something that was really valuable. It opened up a lot of people's eyes. And the worst thing is it shined the light on the background dealings of how ugly and how seemingly, I guess it's corrupt. It's legal, so I guess it's not corrupt. So I don't know what to call it then. So
I know what they're going to call it. They're going to call it domestic terrorism, for sure.
For That's buying stock? That would be funny.
Yeah.
For buying stock, like for a retail person to spend $100 on stock and write a goofy meme is and that's just it. You'd have to arrest people literally for like buying stock.
For
it's
doing
like
the thing they tell you to do.
For doing the thing that they
that's
tell
so
you to
crazy.
Do.
Dude, this is bizarro land. Okay, last question. How do you get in on this? Like a guy like me, I'm not real savvy with stocks. I barely know what you're talking about with shorts. And I say, you know what? I like this idea. Let's let's join together and democratize this thing. What do I do? Do I just go to Reddit's Wall Street Bets? I heard that they were going to make that a private invitation only sort of thing or something like that. But like, what do you do if you want to know, okay, what's the next move? What are we doing as a group? Like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Do you know?
Well, I would, if you, you know, I'm not giving advice. I'm saying if you were so inclined, I would go to Wall Street Bets, and I would go ahead and just get on that board real quick before they make it private, because I'm on it right now. So if they go private, I'll be able to see what they're talking about. Right now they're at 7.93 million. And it was, when I got on, it was like 2 million. So it's, yeah, dude, it went nuts. So that's what I would do first. Right. I know for a fact, one of the, it's Nokia, BlackBerry, GameStop, I'm trying to think, Silver, there's like three or four that are right now that they've all been talking about. And right now I just saw this tweet, buy silver, crash JP Morgan. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are just, they're really, really upset. So, and there are 7 million of them. So, you know, that's the first thing you can do. Those are some of the plays that I, for me personally, this late into it, especially if you don't know what, you know, if you don't know how things work this late on, even at a retail level, probably GameStop. I would, I don't know. I won't advise anyone, but it's kind of late.
Yeah, you might lose a lot of money if you start messing with this. You're very vulnerable to lose whatever it is you invest, because this is like crazy turbulent, like almost cryptocurrency turbulent. Well, you know.
And I would look at it not as an investment then, if you're gonna do it at this point, and just say, look, I'm just giving this away to the cause, because. Yeah. This thing went, it's at 300 and something. It went up to 500. They're saying hold the line, but they've limited, these platforms still have limited the number that the people can buy, but I'm sure the hedge funds can buy whatever they want. So it's really shining the light on a really ugly rig system that is just, I don't know what to say about it. I really can't. I know what I want to say about it, and I'm saying it in my head, but I won't say it out in public, you know, but it's bad. It's really bad. Yeah. So I would go on the board. I would check it out. I would get familiar with the language, with the bigger players, understand. Right now, the big things was BlackBerry, Nokia. I'm in Nokia personally, BlackBerry, Silver. There's all kinds of things floating around right now. There was a version of cryptocurrency that they were talking about. I went to go buy some of that, but I had to install additional software. I never got around to actually doing it. So it's, you know, it's something that you'd have to ease yourself into, particularly before you put dollar bills on it. And already one of the people that is one of the bigger players, the SEC.gov started liking his TikTok videos, which were about the internet, meaning this is already beginning a soft form of intimidation.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, all right, so, man. I kept you past your time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to keep you much longer. Thank you for sharing this information. A lot more research to do for all of us. The places the audience can find you. You're still on Twitter. Share with the audience where do you want them to follow you, to catch up with your research? I know you're sort of throttling back on some of that stuff, but when you do drop mm-hmm. research, where can they find you?
Yeah, on Twitter you can do @AI_SMQ, and then there's still the YouTube videos, which is SMQ space AI. You can and look at the catalog of stuff and go back a couple of years. One thing I noticed, I can't seem to find any of my videos more than 2 years old. You'd have to look for that we died in 2012. It's not actually showing, at least on the page. So it's still out there, but they made it invisible. So that's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I've given up on YouTube a long time ago. They're a real bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, they are a bummer.
But like you talked about on that last show, the censorship is part of it, because I think they know that stuff like this can happen, and it leads to, you know, this thought can eventually become reality, and this viral sensation of democratizing the internet is a real threat to them. So that is absolutely why the censorship started kicking in. All right, man. I want to thank you for your time again.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, man. We'll see you.
All right, bye.
High octane, because this is going to be the biggest event of 21. You thought 2020 was bad. 21, getting scary already. Now, here's what I didn't get to that I wanted to tell you about. On the side, I was talking with SMQ before the show. He said, look up this guy, W.D. Gann. And I looked at his Wikipedia. This was a financial trader. He's dead. And he was a 33rd degree Freemason who invested based on astrology and ancient mathematics. Right? And we get into ancient mathematics, gematria, you get into the Pythagoras. He was the OG of secret societies. And what was curious was that not only did we see some connections with the occult and the financial investment stuff with the astrology, but I stumbled across, because I was looking up Terence McKenna, and there's a book by William Thompson called The Time Falling Bodies Take to Light. And I'm going to read you from the quote here. He says, "The movement into the future always involves the revisioning of the past. History turns on a spiral, and with each turn, it comes back on a new level to the initial position. From the Freemasonry of Mozart's magic flute, to the Hermeticism of the Renaissance, to the syncretism of Plutarch's Roman Empire, to the New Kingdom and the Reformation of Egyptian religion, to the Old Kingdom and the founding of civilization." Basically, there's this occult perspective of these cycles of time. And as I talked about, my concern was that, like Steve Bannon with the Kali Yuga, trying to burn it all down, trying to finish out this cycle. But my bigger concern is that the finishing of this cycle will introduce a worse cycle for us, the slaves at the bottom. That's what I'm concerned about. Now, if you go back to, and I'll put links in the show notes, the show I did with SMQ, the We Died in 2012 show, which is very pertinent, which, oh, by the way, before I forget, back then, years ago, I was doing the first half of the show for free on the free feed and the second half only on Patreon. And I'm now I've got that bonus show, that full version of that show is up on the VIP section and on IlluminatiWatcher.com. So, you know, go there. If you can sign up for Patreon or you can sign up for Illuminati Watcher VIP. It's basically the same stuff. You get the same content. In fact, on the VIP, I've got a deal, 20% off. It's only $5. 20% off takes you down to $4. I've only got 1,000 slots. It expires in May. Use promo code HOTGIRLSUMMER. IlluminatiWatcher.com. Get in the VIP section. Anyway, during that show, which you'll hear when you sign up and you listen to that episode, I started talking about the occult and about how they worship Saturn and Kronos. Kronos, of course, Father Time. Because Saturn introduced the time and measurements, the quantifiable nature of reality that we're told to believe in. And here you got SMQ talking about the financial markets tied to the linear concept of this. Okay? It's a direct connection to the Saturnian stuff. And what happened was Saturn materialized the spiritual world according to the occult doctrine. And I argued a while back, what the occultists seek to do is spiritualize matter. This is a Gnostic concept. You have to dissolve matter and re-spiritualize consciousness, which I've always argued in my books and stuff. This will happen via transhumanism. And now, if you listen to my four-part show on the Great Reset. I mean, we've seen, because of the virus, we've seen a genuine value in creating an avatar social media type digital consciousness environment for hanging out. It's like Zoom on steroids. And my concern, just like with Trump, you know, we talked about how like memes and these 4chan nerds and all these folks, they manifest reality just to troll. Just like Trump, I think the powers could be behind this stuff. Because these online folks that are manifesting this reality, they're very nihilistic. The whole worldview is nihilistic. They want to burn it all down. Which again, like I get, like you go on social media and see these celebrities out going to tropical islands during the pandemic when half of us can't pay the damn bills. So I get it. But just like Trump was never going to be the populist hero that the 4chaners thought he was going to be, or they were just trolling just to troll. In the same way, doing this might not actually level the playing field. I would argue, and this is just a consideration, I don't know, I'm not a financial guy, I have no idea. But if we collapse the economic system, What if, let's consider, what if the power structure comes at us with some new BS? Right? You destroy the economic system, you destroy Wall Street, you might destroy the American dollar. And this might push us into the Great Reset, where they get full control over everything. Because they're going to say, look, we got to protect you because you got these domestic terrorists on Reddit. And, you know, we'll make sure that can never happen again. A bit of problem, reaction, solution. Hey, you know, the stock market is so unpredictable. We're going to instead, you know, instead of worrying about these Redditors collapsing the banks again, we got to let the 1,000 richest corporations in the World Economic Forum redistribute all that you need. We're just going to have a universal basic income, and, you know, the American superpower will be put to her knees. Because that is the eight steps. That's the eight steps of the World Economic Forum to get us into the Great Reset. Destroy American dominance with the U.S. dollar. Test Western democracy to its breaking point. Isn't that what is happening? That's my big concern with all this. What do you think? Am I way off? Am I off base seeing that as a possible theory? Hit me on. I'm gonna put a post for this show on my Twitter at Illuminati Eyes, on my Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Check them out. Comment. What do you think? Let's start a conversation. We need to do it real quick. Am I way off base seeing that as a possible theory? Because I'm with SMQ. I'm with this movement. Like, I'm like, yeah, burn the oligarchy down. But here's my worry. You think they're just going to take the L? Uh-uh. They're going to take us down with it. We got to pay the price. And maybe that's worth it for some people. I don't know what the right answer is. I'm just saying, we all need to be concerned, right? We need to be concerned and be cognizant, be aware. Don't live in fear. I'm not trying to spike you with fear on a lovely day. Just keep it in the back of your mind. Keep an eye on events. Make some right moves. Be cognizant. Be cautious. Because this is a very turbulent time. This is a much bigger event than we think it is. All right, you know what to do. Again, I've got these supporter feeds. If you're tired of commercials, you want bonus stuff, go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, hit the VIP section. Or if you're on Patreon, go to patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. Or I'm on Rockfin. I've got an exclusive Rockfin show I do called Inside the Mind of a Conspiracy Theorist. Rockfin.com/creator/Isaac. All the links are in the show notes. You know the drill. Until next time, stay woke.